We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we are glad to have you with us. President Obama has made health care reform a top priority of his administration. He has talked in fairly general terms about what he would like to see happen and has said to the Congress that he would like to do the heavy lifting of developing in detail the kind of reforms that he would like to see. And he's called on Congress to do that this year. However, on Capitol Hill, support for the president's agenda has split along party lines. And as we know, this summer, members from both parties have faced some angry constituents who are protesting, well, a variety of things, but certainly they're protesting what they see as a government takeover of healthcare delivery. This morning, we'll try to talk a little bit about what's been proposed and also talk about prospects for passage of any meaningful legislation. And our guest for the program in this hour is Mary Agnes Carey. She is a correspondent for Kaiser Health News. This is a nonprofit organization that's interested in in-depth coverage of healthcare policy and politics. She herself has been a journalist covering healthcare for quite a while. She most recently served as associate editor for CQ Health Beat. That's a daily report on healthcare policy. She also served as Capitol Hill bureau chief for Congressional Quarterly and covered a wide range of topics at Dow Jones Newswires. Before that, she worked for newspapers in Connecticut and Pennsylvania and won a number of awards for her work. She's joining us this morning to talk, and we'll certainly be happy to take questions. I know she'll do her best to answer questions. So we just ask people to be brief in their questions and try to keep them on target on the topic. But of course, anybody who is listening is certainly welcome to join in the conversation. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. And we also have a toll-free line. So that would mean if it's a long-distance call for you, use that number. And we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. So 333-WILL or 9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, Mary Agnes Carey, hello.
Good morning.
Hey, thank you very much for giving us your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Let's start with the president. Next week, the members of Congress, they're coming back from their August recess, and the president will address a joint session of Congress, something that is...
I just lost him again. I just lost him.
Mary Agnes?
Yeah, we lost you for a second.
Oh,
now you're back. You're
okay.
Talking about the joint session,
right?
He's
going to speak with Congress. This is a rare thing, not something that happens all the time. And there's a lot of speculation on what he'll say. Will there be some change in emphasis? And I think that there has been some criticism of the president for not presenting a more detailed plan of what he wants and instead being kind of general and then leaving the specifics to Congress. So let me ask this question. What has the president said about what he would like to see?
Just as you said, he's been extremely general, and I think that's been a political calculation because let's remember what happened when President Bill Clinton drafted a health care reform plan with a 500-person secret task force and then brought it to Congress. It landed with a thud, had a lot of problems, and eventually nothing was passed. What President Obama has said is to Congress, I want to get everyone covered. I want this bill to be paid for. I want it to reduce the growth in health care costs. And as you said, it's up to you to navigate the details. And the devil is in the details always. It's been very hard to do. Lots of hearings on Capitol Hill. We've had some committees pass bills. Another committee, the Senate Finance Committee, is trying to work on a bipartisan product. It's been a very partisan issue. And so the president has been general. He's expected to get a little more specific next week. Talk about the moral issues in health care. We have to get it passed this year. He is expected to be more specific. And what exactly how specific he'll be is unclear. Where he'll be on this idea of a public plan is unclear. The White House has sent a lot of different signals. They said, look, we prefer the public plan, which again would be a government-offered and run insurance plan that would be a choice for people to have. They wouldn't have to enroll in it. It would be one of the choices. He still prefers, he said several times, as have members of the administration, they prefer the public option, but it's not the only element of the bill. They know that it's a big sweeping bill. There's a lot of opposition and a lot of support on Capitol Hill for the public option. So I think he'll try to be more specific, give more directional arrows, but he still knows that the folks that have to pass the bills, the committee chairs, the party leaders, they need as much flexibility as they can to produce a bill that's going to get enough votes to pass or nothing will become law this year.
Well, who really, when he speaks to the Congress, who really is he talking to? Is he talking to the Congress or do you think the administration sees that this as another opportunity for the president to talk to the American people?
I think it's both. I think he's trying to say to moderate Democrats, especially in the Senate, who might be on the fence, a little worried about the public plan. Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, for example, is someone who's coming out saying doesn't know if she can support that. Ben Nelson, a Democrat of Nebraska, has come out very worried about some provisions of the bill. If he speaks before Congress, it's a very powerful moment. I've covered the State of the Union before. Both chambers gather in the House chamber. It's a very sort of a theatrical moment, and I don't mean to take any seriousness away from it, but it's this very powerful moment when the President of the United States says, I need this. And he will say this in person to people. I'm sure he's already called some of these members and will continue to have them in one-on-one meetings with him at the White House. But it's a time to talk to Congress. It's a time to talk to the public because it will be on national television. And it's a time to refocus after we've had this August recess where, as you mentioned earlier, there's been a lot of town hall meetings, a lot of concern. Over the August break, new deficit numbers came out showing something like $9 billion of deficits that are going to occur over the next year. The unemployment numbers, as were mentioned earlier, just came out today, 9.7%, the highest it's been in 20 years. He's got a lot of things, a lot of obstacles standing in his way. And so I think the president's out there to say to the American public, say to members of Congress, this has to get done. Here's what I really want you to do. And the key there will be whatever specificity he chooses or not chooses to bring to that speech.
Yeah. As you've pointed out, one of the most controversial aspects, and maybe the thing that's gotten the most opposition from Republicans, is the public option. A government insurance program that would compete with private insurers. And there are a lot of Republicans who said they'd simply, that's a non-starter with them. At the same time, on the president's side of the aisle, I think there are a lot of Democrats who say they think that that's essential. So here we have a very sharp divide between members of the two parties. And I think that there has been, at least some weeks back, some of what I was reading suggested that maybe the administration might be willing to drop that idea, which would, of course, you know, make some Republicans happy and make some Democrats very unhappy. Do you think that that's possible, that something that seems to be so fundamental might actually be something that the administration would be willing to drop if it means success or failure of the whole enterprise?
I think that a lot of analysts have viewed the public plan as a bargaining chip. Mm-hmm. It's something, as you mentioned, a lot of Democrats want. President Obama has said it's what he prefers. There's also a possible alternative emerging out of negotiations with the Senate Finance Committee where health care would be run as a co-op. There are co-ops that govern electricity and agriculture all over the country. Kent Conrad, who runs the Senate Budget Committee, who also is on the Finance Committee, has said, look, these co-ops operate on regional or a state basis. They're locally owned, locally operated. It will be a local solution, which is something Republicans would prefer versus the idea of a national plan, and that may or may not be the middle ground on this issue. But as you noted, there are a lot of Democrats who've said we've got to have a public plan option. And Nancy Pelosi, who's the Speaker of the House, a Democrat from California, has said she can't pass the bill in the House without it. So you could have the president, of course, will be, you know, he'll talk about the public option next week, but I think that it could very well end up in the House bill. It's there now. It's in one of the bills that's passed a Senate committee called the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. Of course, this was chaired by the late Senator Edward Kennedy. There's a public plan there. The finance panel might have this health co-op approach, and then the Senate will have to work that out to see what they do on the bill if they get a bill to the floor. So it's volatile. It's incredibly passionate on both sides, and it's one of those things that will keep resurfacing as the debate continues.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Mary Agnes Carey. She's a correspondent for Kaiser Health News. We're talking about the reform, healthcare reform effort now going on in Washington, has been going on for some time. Questions are certainly welcome. We have somebody ready to go here, and others can call in 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455 is the number. A first caller up here is someone in Champaign and line one. Hello.
Yes. I just wanted to clarify, get clarification on a few things. I think a lot of what has been said in the public, there have been a lot of egregious claims made. And one is, for example, the end-of-life counseling issue. And one thing I wanted to note, and if I'm correct, it was a Bush administration proposal in 2007 on which that's actually based. And so that's one thing. Overhead costs with regard to Medicare, according to Paul Krugman and other economists, is around 3 to 4%, whereas in private health insurance it would be 16 to 20%, from what I understand. One thing I also was surprised by was a claim that it would cost $200 per family, only $200 per family, for those persons without health care who go into the emergency room and so forth and get coverage. In other words, the regular family through taxes and so forth and increases in, especially in health care costs, it would cost them $200 per family. I actually looked at the report on that that was done, I think it was by your group, I'm not sure, but I looked online and read the report that was linked to from Newsweek, which claimed it was $200 per family, and it said specifically $350 per person per family, which would be $1,400 for a two-child family. So I just like to double-check about that, whether that's correct or not. And just to note finally that President Truman proposed a broad public option in 1945 and then in 1948 as well. So it's a long debate.
Could you just clarify for me that $350 or what? Now, what exactly is it? That would be the cost per family, the cost of a health reform bill?
No, this was actually for those persons without health care who go into the the claim was, I think Obama had said it was in the thousands for families that would that they're paying an extra cost because of people who have no health care whatsoever.
Right.
And then, of course, in the AP reporting from apparently Newsweek, which refers to this study, which I think was by the Kaiser Group, that claimed that it was $200 per family. I actually looked at it. I hit the link. And on, I think, page 19, if I recall, it actually has a long sentence that says it's $350 per person that people pay in increased, I think it was
right,
healthcare costs as a result. So I thought it was a flagrant problem. It was even in our local newspaper, according to the AP, it said $200 for family. And I thought, well, that's very sad that they're misreporting, you know, something
sure,
obvious. But
I think a lot of the stuff you're talking about gets to a lot of the complications around health reform. I mean, the figure that I've certainly heard is, and if you took 350 times four, you'd be in that $1,500 per family.
Exactly.
Is what is costing. That number has been out there quite a bit in several studies. The end-of-life counseling, again, we're talking about having Medicare pay a physician to counsel family members and a patient about how they want to be treated at the end of life. And
right,
there was just a great article today in the Washington Post looking at this program operating at a hospital in Wisconsin. And the real emphasis was you need to have these discussions before the person is basically, you know, incapable of having the discussion. They're
right,
unconscious near the end of their life. This is about paying Medicare physicians to provide this service. And as you note, there's been a lot of, you know, there's been the death panel thing floating out there. There's been, you know, all these ideas that if you want to pay a Medicare physician for doing this, and then you want to link any of his reimbursement to how he performed this, did he do it, what did he go over with a patient, this kind of thing. If you put that in a bill that's trying to reduce healthcare costs, somehow that patient and that family in Medicare will be pushed into something they don't want. I don't think that's a fair representation. I think that it's simply trying to have this discussion and reimburse people, physicians and you know, medical practitioners and Medicare for it. But I do wonder, after all the dust up about it, the Senate Finance Committee we talked about earlier is negotiating a bill. It's not in their bill. It's in the House bill. I don't know what's going to end up with that on conference. And you did talk about the difference in the Medicare administrative costs versus
right.
the private sector.
Right.
One complaint from conservatives is, yes, Medicare has a lower administrative cost, but that a lot of those administrative costs are simply assumed by taxpayers in another fashion.
Hmm.
But people who are proponents of the public plan option look at Medicare and say, look, it operates efficiently, it has lower costs, why not get a public plan option out there for people to look at and to compare as they make their choices? So I think all the things you raised are very important, and they're things I have a feeling you're going to be watching and other people are going to watch as this debate unfolds.
Right. Well, I certainly hope more people watch, because I was at the hospital this morning and saw on CNN, they just went for 10 minutes, I think, showing the anger of the Tea Party and so on about
right.
socialism. And so then I wish that people weren't seeing that on CNN, frankly. But thank you very, right. very much.
Well, and just one quick here point before we go on to another caller. And this, I'm sure that I also read this on your website, and this struck me as being very interesting, that a recent survey, and I think this was done by CBS, they were trying to get at what people feel about this whole healthcare reform effort. And what they found was a very high level of people, you know, we've seen all these stories about the town hall meetings and people being very angry about this and yelling about socialism and everything, that in fact, a lot of people just say they're confused. They're very confused about what actually is being proposed.
That's right. One of the biggest issues in this debate is for individual people, for families, to try to figure out what's in this for them, or conversely, what isn't in this for them. And as often happens, I think in Washington, we become extremely immersed in the details. I can tell you about all the white papers that have been released and all the hearings that we've had and all the discussion. But I think sort of out beyond the Beltway, people are now beginning to tune into this. And August is typically kind of a sleepy month, you know, in news. And it was really active because of the town hall meetings and people on both sides of the debate, people that want comprehensive reform passed and people who have a lot of concerns and don't want that to happen. They got their people out there, and all of a sudden, sleepy town meetings turned into, you know, people screaming and yelling and making all sorts of statements. I mean, I just think it's one of those things where it's important to watch the television stories on it. It's important to read in your newspaper. But I think that as Congress now turns to the last few months of the legislative session, I think this discussion could go well into December. But I think that people really have to figure out for themselves, read as much as they can, contact their members of Congress to determine what exactly is in this bill and am I comfortable with it? Because they, as you mentioned earlier, there's immense pressure to get something passed by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And just one addition, if I could make, about Kaiser Health News. Your previous caller made references to studies done by the Kaiser Family Foundation. We are a program of the foundation, but we're editorially independent of it. So we can certainly write about the fantastic work that the foundation does, and we have certainly done that and will continue to do so. But we're out there operating just like any other newspaper or television station or news service. Our stories are being put in newspapers all over the country. I'm having the great opportunity to do interviews with you like this, just as I did when I was at Congressional Quarterly. So just want people to know that we are editorially independent of the foundation.
All right. Our guest is Mary Agnes Carey. She's a correspondent for Kaiser Health News. We're talking about health reform. Questions are welcome. We have some others to talk with. We'll go next to someone on a cell phone in Champaign. Line 2. Hello. Is the caller there? Line 2? Yes, and we're not hearing you well enough to understand.
Good morning. How are you?
You go. Good. Go ahead.
Yes, I am.
Yes, go ahead.
Are we there?
Yes, go ahead. I think we're going to have – maybe if the caller wouldn't mind trying to put through the call once again.
Oh, there we go. All right. So
yes.
I'm going to speak to this with respect to being a consumer. Are you hearing me?
Yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm afraid that we're just going to have to go on. I think we're having a problem with that caller. Maybe he can try calling back and we see if we get a better connection. Let's go next to Effingham here, line 4. Hello.
Yes. Have you discussed, I was away from the radio just a minute, the living will?
Yes. A little bit, yes. Do you have a specific question?
Well, my question is that, or my comment, I should say, is that when I was 60 years old, I sat down and wrote a living will. I never consulted a doctor or a lawyer. I sat down and wrote it out, what was to take place at the end of my life. And I don't think there's any law or such, unless I was declared insane, that can overturn that. Would that be accurate? That's why I wrote it, because it would then follow my wishes while I were able and competent to make that decision.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but I would think the fact that you have a written document is very important. But I think what you should also do is follow it up and talk to your spouse, if you have one, or your children, other relatives, to make sure they know what your wishes are. Because as we all know, with medical emergencies, sometimes things happen very quickly, and you might not be able to communicate your wishes. So I would make sure that someone has that document so they can say, I know this is what he wants, and he wrote it on this date, and here he signed it, and he dated it. And I would certainly make people aware of what you want.
Yes, well, I did so at the time. I made eight copies, one for my wife and one for each of my seven children.
That's great.
And that's all that time ago, and they understand exactly what my wishes are, which is something that decries the death panel ideal that somehow you can't make those decisions. You can't when you are taking your last breath. But I got word of that, I think, right here on 580. There was a gentleman on that found out about that, and long-term health care, which I did that as well, and taking care of on my own. Those things, I'm able to afford the long-term health care at $100 a month, I think it is. And when that runs out, I don't know what would happen then. But in any case, I covered the bases that I could and did so without any input except from my wife. So, I just wanted to share that.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, I think that I don't want to go too much further with this. In fact, we just last week we did a program talking about the importance of end-of-life planning with a physician who works in hospice and who's a gerontologist. And it seemed that the important point that she was trying to get across was that this was an opportunity for individuals to say what they want, not for somebody else to say what they want, but to say what they want. And that she says that by doing that, what you're really doing is a great favor to your family, because
that's right.
If you're not able to speak for yourself, they're dealing, it's a terribly, terribly stressful situation for them. So what you're doing is you're taking that burden off of them, because you are saying, you are making the decision, you're saying, this is what I want. You're not putting that on anybody else. But I think, as you say, the important thing is that you have to make sure that your family know, and to the extent that you can, if you have a family doctor, that everybody knows what you want so that there's no question about it.
That's right. That's totally right. And I think it's all about the more responsibility we all take at all stages of our life for our health care, the better that is.
Okay. Well, I want to see if we can get back to that caller on the cell phone that we're having some trouble with before. Hopefully we got it all worked out here on line two. Hello. Is the caller there? Well, I'm sorry. I don't know what the problem there is. We are going to have to just go on again. Let's go to a caller on line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm generally really, really disgusted with media coverage of this issue. There are so many things that are being left out of the discussion in, general broadcast media, although this show is really great at focusing in on little pieces that are really important. There are so many issues, like one thing that we don't really seem to focus on is that the current healthcare system, you definitely get how many people it doesn't cover. But what we don't talk about is why. Because the goal of insurance companies is to make money. Their purpose is at cross purposes with ours. We want to get health care. Nobody talks about the downward pressure that these rising health care costs are putting on all of our wages. Hopefully that would make a difference. Nobody talks about how it's the conservatives who are still leading the Democratic Party. We are still taking direction. I'm obviously not a conservative, from the Democratic Party. No one points out that the amount of money that they spend doesn't matter at all when it's time for war, when it's time to kill people. But when we got people in our own country, 40 million or more, who don't have health insurance, no problem. there are so many other issues that I'm kind of ranting here, so I'm going to stop. But none of these things are being covered by media. And I would just love to hear our guests, like, start addressing some things. One more point, and this is a really important point of incentives that I don't hear about on the, you know, in the coverage. The head of the Kaiser organization actually a year or two ago gave a talk at the Commonwealth Club about the top five conditions that are bringing our healthcare costs up. It's not just that. It's executive pay. It's these costs. It's the marketing costs. But we've also got the cost of diabetes and heart disease, and that all of these are related to, you know, lifestyle. Smoking contributes a lot of these things. And the government actually has the power to, like, start to affect people's behavior with this, where insurance companies really don't. Again, the system that we have is completely wrong, and no one's reporting on it. Sorry to rant. I kind of don't have patience with people who rant sometimes, but it's just crazy that this looks like it's going to fail again, and largely because of misinformation. Another thing that just came up was the idea of these town hall meetings. No one is talking about how staged these things were, how organized by conservative groups. That was not even brought up on this program. It kills me. This is going to fail if we can't get correct coverage on what the real issues and causes of our problems are. I'll just hang up and listen.
All right. Well, you can take that out anywhere you like.
Okay. The first thing I want to do, if I may, is give the web address of our Kaiser Health News, because we are looking at all these things that the caller talked about, whether it's the cost of chronic care, chronic diseases, whether it's the pressure, like he talked about, rising health care costs help put pressure down on getting a better salary, the economic issues of health care, the policy issues. Kaiser Health News, all one word, kaiserhealthnews.org. So I would just encourage the reader, listener rather, to check that out, and other folks as they want to get more information. There's a couple of trying to think of the best way to go about this. I think some of the media coverage has not been as specific as it can be, in part because of what's been going on in the media industry. I won't spend a lot of time on it, but as we all know, we have newspapers downsizing, television stations are downsizing, radio stations are downsizing. There are fewer reporters out there and fewer reporters with specific knowledge of healthcare. That's one problem. A lot of healthcare coverage may be done by somebody who's got three or four or five different beats, or they may be a political reporter versus a policy reporter. It's not an excuse. It's just an explanation. So I just kind of want to get that out there. Mm-hmm. I think that I can remember months ago, as it became clear that, you know, healthcare was going to take center stage and the economy, you know, the recession started about December 2007. Healthcare analysts here in Washington made the exact same case that your listener just made. Now, wait a minute. They'd say, look, if it comes to war, if it comes to a defense, a weapons system, they pay whatever we need, but healthcare is going to help fix the economy. You can't fix the economy without healthcare. If you're going to spend that kind of money for other things in the budget, you need to spend it for healthcare. Why just focus on the deficit when it comes to healthcare? I think that's a legitimate argument, and it's one where, again, when we talk about healthcare among ourselves and healthcare reform, I think that's something that people, whether it's at a town hall meeting, a community meeting, talking to your neighbor, talking to whoever you want, that's something that we have to start looking at, because Washington needs to reflect the priorities of the electorate, of the people who sent them there. We talked a little bit. He talked about the insurance industry profits. One of the bills would, not one, I beg your pardon, several of the bills would look at how much insurers spend for that sort of administrative cost and how much they spend on medical benefits, wanting to get 85% of the healthcare dollar, if you will, spent on the medical benefits and like 15% spent on the administrative cost to try to get at what the caller talked about on the insurers and what they're making. On this idea, of course, that an insurance company wants to make money, they may not be so keen on covering somebody when they're sick, that those kind of operate at cross purposes. One thing the health insurance industry has done, has said to Congress and to the president, look, if you make everybody have health insurance, it's called an individual mandate, you put everybody in the system, we won't exclude coverage because of pre-existing medical conditions. They still might change premiums based on age or geographics or some other status. That's all being negotiated now, but they have said that part of the reason, and not everyone will agree with this, but the insurers have said, look, you know, that if you get everybody covered, it can help reduce costs for everybody else. And I just want to touch base again briefly on his point. He's absolutely right. As healthcare costs continue to climb, you know, you can have general inflation at 3%, and you can have your health insurance premiums going up at 7 or 8%. That comes out of the worker's wallet. Employers have a certain amount of money that they either will spend or are willing to spend on health insurance. And I've had employer after employer tell me, especially the smaller ones, I haven't given my folks a raise for 3 years because I want them to have health insurance. It's good for my workforce. I morally think it's the right thing to do. But those costs keep climbing, and I need help from Washington. So all these issues are in the current debate being discussed. It's unfortunate that his local media isn't giving him what he wants. Maybe the national media is not giving him what he wants. But check out KaiserHealthNews.org, and I hope that's a help to all of your listeners.
Just do you think that now in the debate in Washington that we have gone past the point of a kind of a honest disagreement over policy and ideology to a kind of winner-take-all thing where essentially with the Democrats, you know, everybody wants to claim a victory. The Democrats want to say, we won, we got a package passed, and the Republicans want to say, we won because we stopped the Republicans, the Democrats, from getting their package passed. I mean, is this all now just come down to bare-knuckle, I win, you lose politics?
Well, that is a great question, and I think that certainly is a common thread through this. Of course, if the Democrats don't pass a health care bill this year, it will be viewed as a huge failure for them, a huge failure for President Obama. It could hurt them in the 2010 elections. But then there are people that say if they pass too ambitious of a bill, that Democrats will lose even more seats next year in the midterm because people will say the bill's too big, it's going to cost too much money, it has too much of a role on government. So it's sort of all these different pressures are coming into play. I do think that there is still a thought among many lawmakers in both chambers and both parties. They go out, whether their constituents are Republican or a Democrat, and they hear the same stuff over and over again. They hear about how I want to start a business, but I can't afford health insurance, or my child got sick and it bankrupted me. Or I couldn't get insurance. They turned me down because I had breast cancer. I mean, these things don't really matter which party you're in. It's what your constituents need. And as I look at this and as I talk to people, of course, these political realities you laid out, they're totally there. Mm-hmm. And I think the higher you go up the food chain, if you will, of the party hierarchy, the stronger those things get. But I think at the base level, senators and lawmakers know what their constituents are going through, and they want help, and they want to help them. The problem is just trying to get enough consensus, enough political will, good enough policy, and I think Democrats are going to have to decide in the next few months, you know, we wanted a bigger bill, may not get a bigger bill. Can we do something smaller? Can we go for half a loaf, come back later, and try to make it bigger? That's a political calculation they have to make.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Mary Agnes Carey. She's a correspondent for Kaiser Health News. This is a nonprofit news organization interested in covering healthcare policy and politics. It is a program of the Kaiser Family Foundation. Although, as she explained at the beginning of the program, the foundation doesn't dictate the editorial policy of Kaiser Health News.
That's right.
She is somebody who has been writing about politics and about the politics of healthcare for some time. She served as associate editor for CQ Health Beat. That's a daily report on healthcare policy. She also served as the Capitol Hill Bureau Chief for Congressional Quarterly and covered a wide range of topics at Dow Jones Newswires. Questions welcome. We have a couple again ready here to go. Let's go to Atwood for our next caller on our line 4. This is the toll-free line. Hello. Yes.
Those protests at the town hall meeting aren't organized. It's just people like me that are angry. I'm not against the health care reform, but some of those provisions in it are just way out of line, and we're angry at being railroaded. And they're not organized. They're just angry people at being angry at being railroaded. And that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Well, you know, let me, Ms. Carey, let me ask you a slightly different kind of question. There has been so much focus on the town halls and on angry people and people yelling at their representatives, and there's been a lot of noise.
Right.
And I think that some people would say what that does is obscure the fact that on Capitol Hill, among Democrats and Republicans, there are actually some things they agree on. If I am not mistaken in that, can you talk about that? I mean,
sure.
Where is there common ground?
There's common ground on the idea you don't deny somebody health care based on a pre-existing condition, right? Common ground on there's been some complaints once people get sick. Insurers do a process called rescission. They go back and they look at, this happens mostly in the individual market. That's not when you get your health insurance through your employer. It's when you go buy it yourself. They scrutinize your application and they look at your medical record. And did, you know, if you forgot to report that you had, one case I read about was a woman had had an allergic, some sort of skin reaction and was treated for it by a dermatologist, didn't report it. And she had a major healthcare crisis and they wanted to cancel her insurance based on what they said was false information she provided when she had her application. A lot of agreement that that's an unfair practice. And that once they start taking your money, the insurers need to cover you. There's a lot of agreement on, for example, in Medicare, if you're in Medicare fee-for-service, the traditional Medicare program, every time a doctor, a laboratory, a physical therapist provides a service, they're paid by the service. Very little coordination of care. People want to look at that. That's happened more in private sector. It's happened to some extent, some believe, in the Medicare Advantage program, which is the private option in the Medicare program. But there's a lot of thought about, look, let's look at better coordination of care. That's where you have things like health information technology, right? Who wouldn't be thrilled at the idea of not having to fill out every single form? You know, when you go to the doctor, you fill it out every year. It's the same thing. Or wouldn't it be a great idea, heaven forbid, you're hurt in a car accident, that you've got an electronic medical record that that hospital who's treating you, that's treating you, could get that record and know right away, are you allergic? Have you had a heart surgery? What's your medical history? So there is great agreement on to have more preventive care measures, more health information technology, more research into what treatments work and what don't, and better coordination of care. But a lot of that gets lost. And, you know, I've heard some people say that when they look at everything in the bill comprehensively, one could argue there's agreement on maybe as high as 75 to 80% of the things they want to do in these bills. But it's the pieces that get the most attention, whether it's this dust up and some misinformation about the end of life care or the public health option. And I'm sure there'll be other things I've forgotten, but some of these other issues get all the focus when there's so much more there. And I think that the conversation has been broader on Capitol Hill and maybe needs to get broader in the public as well.
Okay. Let's talk with somebody here in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
My name is Grant Antwine. First of all, thank you for doing this topic. It's a very important topic. And thank you, Mary, for coming on and doing this. I am a community organizer here in Champaign County, Healthcare Consumers. We have been working very hard on this whole national health reform ever since it was started, that they were going to do the debate. One of the issues that we wanted to address is, and with the previous caller about the town hall meetings, I'm very concerned when I hear people who say that this public option is a dangerous thing when we've actually had a public health insurance option. But it's only for people 65 and older, and that would be Medicare. And you hear a lot of these anti-public option pundits, politicians, and citizens say that the public option is going to be the demon that brings this country down. And then they go around and promote Medicare. Medicare is a public option. And to that end, we have been working very hard on trying to educate the people that we represent in Champaign County. And I just wanted to tell folks that we are having a community meeting on national health reform, which will be Thursday, September 10th at 6:30 p.m. at the Champaign Public Library. Folks are welcome to come out, hear very specific information on the current legislation, what's coming up next, and then we can have a public discussion on what is going to happen locally as far as the health reform movement. I just wanted to open that up, and thank you again for speaking on this topic.
Sure. All right. Well, I appreciate the call. Other calls, questions, comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Our guest, by the way, is Mary Agnes Carey. She's a correspondent for Kaiser Health News. Just to go back to we were talking a little, you were talking a little bit earlier. I asked about, well, where is their common ground? And you said, well, in fact, that there are there is a lot of agreement on some very basic principles. It seems though that that what the caller points to and what other people have pointed to is, and maybe one of the most difficult things, is for those people who do not qualify for Medicare or Medicaid, mm-hmm. and can't get health insurance, they can't afford it, it's not offered by their employer for whatever reason, it seems that the big question is, what do we do for those people and how do we address their need? And here it seems that on the two sides of the aisle, we have a very fundamental disagreement on how that need should be met.
Fundamental disagreement on the public option, but I bet you there's more agreement on this idea of it's called a gateway or an exchange to set up a national, or you could do it through the state as well, to set up basically a marketplace where people who need insurance could go and shop for it. There'll be certain, they've put in certain provisions to try to keep people in employer coverage just because they don't want to erode the employer-based system. Everyone's been pretty clear that they want to build upon the system that works, but a system, a gateway or an exchange, and also there would be in the bills that have passed, we've had three bills pass in, they're fairly similar, but they're small changes in each committee, but three committees in the House have passed a bill, one committee in the Senate, both would offer subsidies to help people of certain income levels buy health care on that exchange. And so that's another area of agreement, the idea that it's understood that in some parts of the country, if you went on the individual market, you might have a very large menu of options. And then in other areas of the country, you might only have one or two, or you might have one insurer that has like 80% of the market. They want to change the rules of that game. Many people in Washington in both parties say that consumers should have more choice for their coverage. So I think that's another area that where you could have some consensus and it could get to some of these problems that people have been talking about.
Well, let's talk with someone in Ottawa, Illinois, line one right here. Hello.
Hello, this is Roy.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to hear her opinion on the people that go out of the country to buy their drugs and how that is affecting the economy since we lose the sales tax. But at the same time, we have all these people that are basically taking anywhere from 15, and I know for a fact a man that takes 26 drugs at one pill time. And all that screws up your metabolism, you know, everything in your body. And I'm really at a blame for the drug companies who think they have the magic pill to fix this, and then the doctors that go ahead and promote it. And, you know, how can this be fit into a new healthcare package that we stop this ludicrous medicationing of our patients?
In the House bill, there is a provision which would place a tax on direct consumer advertising, which I think you would, if I'm understanding you correctly, you would look at that as a problem. That's something, this constant advertising on the television and in papers about all these new drugs that you have to have, that they're trying to address that. That's one policy solution. In an FDA, that's Food and Drug Administration, reauthorization bill that Congress passed a few years ago, the FDA was given greater authority and greater scrutiny to look at some of these ads. And so I think that, you know, on the flip side of it, to be fair, a proponent of somebody from the drug industry or other free speech proponents may say, now, wait a minute, you know, it's completely free speech for a drug company to promote its drug or for a consumer to read about that drug and demand that drug from their doctor. But I think your point is that there's a lot of marketing out there, a lot of advertising pushing this high use of drugs, right? And the pricing, that's right. The brand names are always going to be higher than the generics.
Well, no, and I'm saying the fact that why can we buy the same drug out of this country cheaper and skirt the sales tax, which right now I think we need here in this country.
Right. No, I mean, you're right.
Mail order, it's just ridiculous.
They do. And you know, a lot of these countries have cut deals with the drug makers where they kind of have a price control. They'll pay a certain amount for the drug. And what's happening is as more people in the United States go to Canada, for example, pharmaceutical companies look at that. And there's been there's been a move to allow importation from Canada, for example, right? Or from another country, if it can be deemed safe, which the head of the health Department of Health and Human Services almost always, no matter what the party says, now, wait a minute, I can't guarantee that drug reimportation can be safe. But as more Americans have begun to go to Canadian pharmacies, for example, do it mail order or go over the border, the drug makers have made it pretty clear, the Canadian government, look, you know, we're not going to provide an endless supply of drugs at this lower amount of money. And so in turn, the Canadian officials have been getting nervous about having too many Americans come get drugs there from their pharmacies. Now, the other thing, just to throw in, I know that you can get drugs cheaper by mail, but there have been, not it's not always a case, but there have been cases where there have been counterfeit drugs. They haven't, you know, they're not the real deal, and people have been harmed by that. So I would just want to throw a slight word of caution to people that you should have, and in most cases you will have more certainty if you get it at a local pharmacy. But you're right, they're cheaper in a lot of countries. That's been looked at here in the House bill again. The House bill would give the head of the Department of Health and Human Services the power to negotiate Medicare drug prices with drug manufacturers. There's a lot of opposition to that, and there are a lot of people that like the idea, but it's definitely in the mix. It's in discussion. That's been discussed several times and been defeated, but it's in the House bill as part of the healthcare discussion.
Well, again, I want to thank the caller for the questions. We're coming down to the point here. We have maybe about three or four minutes left. One of the questions I want to ask you again, my apologies for going back to the politics here, but
no problem.
Can the Democrats get a bill passed without any Republican votes?
Well, you could, but here's the difficulty of it. In the Senate, there are rules governing, if you want to avoid, you don't have, they don't have 60 Democratic votes in the Senate, right? They're at 59 now after Senator Kennedy has passed away. And there's no guarantee right now, looking at it, that all those Democrats would vote for the bill. We mentioned Mary Landrieu of Louisiana earlier. We mentioned Ben Nelson of Nebraska. You've got some Democrats that are kind of on the fence. So if there is a I don't want to get too boring here, but there is a procedure in the Senate called reconciliation, which allows you to pass with 51 votes, which ostensibly would mean that Democrats could pass with Democratic-only votes and still lose some of their own party. The problem is with budget reconciliation, everything has to pertain to budget and financing. So only certain elements of the health care bill could go that way, things like any reductions in Medicare spending or financing to set up the public option, which is controversial. You could get that through maybe without a Republican vote because you would use reconciliation and get 51 votes, but you would likely have to move a second bill that has a lot of things where people agree on, like more prevention, more health IT, more coordination of care, no discrimination against you for to get a policy because you're sick. But the problem is politically, if you move one bill through reconciliation, which a lot of the Republicans in the Senate, they vehemently oppose it, there's no guarantee they're going to vote for that second bill. And they could filibuster it, and you'd have to have 60 votes to overcome that hurdle. So in the House, they could pass it without Republican votes. They've passed it the committee without any Republican votes, and the margin there is so large that Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, could lose like 38 Democrats if she needed to for whatever reason. If conservative Dems didn't want to vote for it in the House, she could lose a few and still pass it. The Senate's the problem. And as you know, if it doesn't pass the Senate, you won't have a Senate and House conference, which produces a final bill, and then you know, it would go to the president. But there'll be a lot of if in fact Senate Democratic leaders determine that they're not going to get any Republican votes, there'll be a phenomenal amount of pressure on these moderate Democrats to vote for some kind of package, and that could in essence really change what's in the package to get these moderate Dems on board.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like the administration now is faced with this difficult choice that says, do we pass what we can pass and declare victory? Is it better to do that rather than to try to hold out for everything we want and particularly make people happy who are on the most left side of the spectrum?
That's right. You got a lot of people in town here that lived through the Clinton health care bill, and they saw the Democrats had the House, they had the Senate, they had the White House. They did not get any health care bill passed at all. Democrats lost control then, eventually, of the House of Representatives, in part because of that. And it just was it was a really hard moment for the party. And there are a lot of people there that don't want to repeat it, are trying to figure out what's the middle ground, what can we get, and what's doable this year. And I think that it's just the pressure's on now, and we're just going to have to see what happens this fall.
And so then, again, next week when the president speaks to Congress, then I expect you and a lot of other people who will be watching very closely to see what the president says, to see if there are some clues there as to what exactly the strategy is now going to be.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Any last sort of thought that you might like to leave with folks?
My only thought is I was delighted to hear the announcement earlier about the community meeting. I think these are forums that people should go to. They're not all screaming sessions. A lot of the I talked to a lot of my reporter colleagues who have been out all over the country, and they said, wow, you know, my town hall meeting didn't go that way. I didn't have people standing and yelling and screaming. I just encourage people, whether it's through our website, again, kaiserhealthnews.org, or another news service you're comfortable with, find out for yourself what's in this bill, and learn about it so you can be informed as well.
All right. Well, we appreciate you very much giving us some of your time today, Ms. Carey.
And thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Our guest, Mary Agnes Carey, she is a correspondent for Kaiser Health News. And again, if you're interested in their organization and in trying to read up on what's on what's in this proposal, you can go to their website, which is Kaiser Health News. So that's all as one word, kaiserhealthnews.org.